you out to Mike too. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. Just got done calling the game in the TV studio here in Spokane. So they put a whooping on another WCC team after a somewhat bad 6-minute start.
What do you make of these slow starts?
I mean, there's these gyms. Historically, over the last 20 years, this has been the biggest game in every opponent's home gym for the year. So there's always unbelievable energy in the opposing gym. And Gonzaga usually feeds off of that. And so now they have to create their own energy. And I saw just a little bit of a slow start tonight. Plus, USD made some shots early. I mean, you got to kind of give them a little bit of credit.
Yeah, and it's always tough when you're playing these games against teams where you know that you just have such a talent advantage to really kind of get up for something like that. Like, that's, I imagine that's got to be hard to do at times.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 20-year-old kids and how consistent and professional is their approach. It's not like, you know, LeBron James where you've played in, you know, however many games and, you know, 10 NBA finals, whatever it is, and you can control your emotions. I mean, these guys are just figuring it out.
So let me ask you this thing, because I'm always curious as we wait for people to kind of jump in here, is that when you call a game, like basically I'm assuming you're doing it from in studio, you're basically calling from watching on a TV, like how much different and how difficult is that compared to, you know, sitting courtside and actually watching stuff when you're in the actual arena?
You know, it's a lot different because for example, if you're calling a game in person and you're close to the action, sometimes you're not even watching the ball. You're watching a coach's interaction with a player, or you're watching an official talk to a ref, or you're seeing, you know, two teammates kind of interact, good or bad. You don't have the ability to see that when you're calling a game from a studio. You know, like last night, I think that caught me a little bit. I made a comment on Boise State and Derek Alston with, you know, he got taken out with what I perceived as because he had two fouls. Well, Leon Rice, good friend of mine, coach at Boise State, texted me back this morning. Well, it was actually like midnight last night that, you know, it was more so having to do with him being tired because they're playing in elevation. But because I'm not there and I can't see his, you know, reaction as he's walking off the court, I just assume, a lot of times you'll assume something as opposed to knowing a true reason behind something.
Yeah, it's got to be weird, you know. It's you're so used to kind of being in the gym and doing all of that, but now everything is kind of on. It's like it's got to be like having meetings when you're stuck on Zoom instead of actually being able to talk to someone face to face.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, I think the broadcast prep this year has been great because you will get a 20 to 30 minute Zoom with most coaches beforehand, before a game to kind of go over, you know, personnel and to go over, you know, the most recent games and what they're doing well, what they're not doing well, kind of maybe talk about, you know, recruiting philosophy, maybe a little bit about overview of the league, where when you're at a shoot around, sometimes you'll just get, you know, five to 10 minutes, and the coach is obviously maybe a little more distracted by watching guys shoot on one end or the other, or making sure their assistants are running things. So I think this year with Zoom meetings with coaches, it's been more insightful to know more about their program. But the hard part is then, you know, kind of being able to see some of the things in person before the game starts.
So let me ask you this, Dan. I want your best story from playing on the road in one of these tiny little gyms. Because I did – so about 5 years ago, maybe it was 6 years ago, I did something on the 10-year anniversary of, like, the Adam Morrison versus J.J. Redick Player of the Year race. And, I mean, Mo had – like a dozen different ridiculous stories about like what he went through when he was playing on the road in a lot of these gyms. Like there was one, I think it was at Loyola Marymount, where he had like 7 points in the first half and was not playing well at all. And then someone threw like a battery at him or something like that as he was walking off the court at halftime. And then he had like 36 in the second half. and finished with like 43. So I want your best story from playing on the road in one of these little gyms.
You know, my junior year at Pepperdine, and this was when Pepperdine was really good under Paul Westfall. They played a trapping kind of real fast style. And so I was a junior. I had a nice start to the season. Then I missed some games with a broken finger. Had a couple good games before we finally went on the road to play Pepperdine. And the student section at Pepperdine didn't know who I was. They were heckling one of my teammates, thinking that he was me. And so in pregame warmups, you know, 45 minutes before the game, going through all my ball handling, shooting stuff, well before the pregame layup lines, they're yelling all this stuff to one of my teammates. And it was Jermaine Forbes, who was he was from London. And the funny thing is we look nothing alike, nothing alike. He's a 6'2" black guy who could get up, he could dunk. And I'm 6 foot. Obviously, I'm white. I've got floppy hair. And I'm just sitting back, like kind of finishing my workout, just listening to these students kind of go at Jermaine and yelling all this stuff. And I'm just shaking my head. And Jermaine was great about it, like, because we were buddies. He was a great dude. And he was like kind of, you know, egging him on, trying to get him to say more stuff. And he was laughing the whole time.
That's great. That's great. Opposing student sections are the best, man. I think that's the best part about the college basketball experience. And I feel like that's kind of what we're missing the most right now without fans there. It's just, you know, you watch it to try to, like, live through that environment. And you go to the games and you just hear all the ridiculous stuff that these students are saying at players. All right, so we got some people in here now, Dan. Let me ask you this. What is Gonzaga's Achilles heel this year? And if they are going to end up getting bounced like early in a tournament setting, what's going to be the reason for that?
You know, I think their Achilles heel is not having another 4 or 5 man that you can absolutely rely on. I think Anton Watson has been very good at times this year. He's been, you know, I hate to say it, but he's been very average or mediocre at times this year. I think he showed some signs tonight. I think he had 10 points, but he also had 4 fouls. And he wasn't his same energetic and energy guy defensively that he was last year before he got hurt. So I hope that he can continue to become a bigger presence on both ends of the floor and a little more consistent. I really do wish they had another big-time presence on the low block. You know, I don't think Ballo's quite ready just yet. He missed the game tonight with a banged-up thumb. We'll see how long he's out. I don't know anything more than he missed tonight, and they're hoping to get him back in the next week or so. You know, because besides Timmy, they really don't have a low-post threat. They're a perimeter-oriented team. But not necessarily a three-point shooting perimeter-oriented team. They're a perimeter-oriented team in regards that their perimeters are the guys that are making plays, whether it's pick and roll to dump downs, whether it's a Yayi with timed cuts on the weak side, dribble drive actions. If Timmy were to get in foul trouble and miss a long stretch, you know, who's going to guard in the interior for an opponent, or where might you get a low post presence on the offensive end?
Yeah, because I think that that's actually pretty important for what Mark Few wants to do, right? Like, they correct me if I'm wrong here, because obviously you know this team better than I do, but it feels like this is what his kind of game plan is offensively. It's like, we're going to run and we're going to try to get something quick in transition, either a layup or a three. And then if we don't, we're going to run ball screens after ball screens after ball screens and try to get our five ducking in for like a quick post up. And like, Timmy's great at that. He's the perfect guy to kind of play that role. But if he's not in there, I'm not sure who that guy is. You know, I don't know if Ballo was quite ready. I think he will be maybe in a year or two. And I don't think Anton Watson is that guy either.
Well, you're right with a lot of that in the fact that Gonzaga wants to play fast. And for so many years, people kind of misjudged how Gonzaga wanted to play. A lot of people would say, oh, they don't want to play fast. Not at all. I mean, granted, this is 20 years ago when I played. You know, we wanted to play as fast as anybody in the country. But we couldn't always play as fast as we wanted to because we couldn't get as many stops defensively as the teams have done over the last 8 to 10 years. So I think that's increased their pace on the offensive end, being able to defensively rebound, clean the glass, and go or create turnovers. But Coach Few has always wanted to push in transition. He wants his big to rim run and get an early seal, which Timmy's tremendous at. And then he gives, as long as you earn his trust as a ball handler, he gives you the freedom to probe in transition as a guard and really see what you got. And obviously, you know, Suggs has earned that right away, and rightfully so. He does a nice job, Suggs, I think, of throwing ahead early in transition, flattening the defense, and then after that he'll start probing off the dribble and really collapse the defense. And tonight, if you watch the game, I think Kispert got at least one, maybe. Well, Kispert did get a three in that way where he flattens the defense and then kicks the ball out. But I know Ayayi got another look in that way. I don't think Ayayi made it. But, you know, you flatten the defense and now all of a sudden you get trail threes with good shooters.
So what do you make of Corey as a pro? I think he is a guy that's going to play like a decade in the NBA. I think he is basically the reincarnation of Joe Harris. You know, I see Duncan Robinson and all the success that he's having, and with the importance of shooting at the NBA level. Like, I just don't see why you wouldn't want to take him as, like, I think he should be a lottery pick in this year's draft. Like, what do you make of him as a pro?
Sorry, Rob, you cut out real quick. I want to make sure you were talking about Kispert, right?
Yep, Corey.
Yeah, you know, Kispert is a guy that, because I live in the Spokane area, and you know, even as you know, recently as a couple of years ago, I would go play pickup with the guys when I was still trying to stay in shape. And I saw Kispert as a high school kid at Gonzaga team camp, and his form and his balance and his jump shot was as good as I've ever seen from a high school kid. He gets to Gonzaga, his form looks great. His body, he's been ready since he was a freshman. But he didn't make shots with the amount of consistency that you would expect with the form that he had. Kept working at it, you know, becoming a more comfortable, more complete player. He ended up becoming a better defender over the last couple of years. He's now got added the ability to, you know, put the ball on the deck for one or two dribbles and finish at the rim, whether it's a straight line drive or through contact. He can make a correct read in a pick and roll, even though as an NBA guy, that's not where he's going to be put in that situation. But he can do these other things now in addition to what he came on campus with, and that was being a, you know, a potential for a great three-point shooter. So I agree with you. I think he's a definite first-round pick. I do think he could play himself into the lottery because, as you mentioned, value of a three-point shooter is at an all-time high right now.
Plus, he makes the headband under the floppy hair like he just makes it look so cool. You know, I want to grow my hair out and just start like doing these podcasts with my headband on. Man, I'm very jealous of the flow.
Well, Zags are always known for good hair. You go back. I mean, I had a long hair. I own four barbershops now here in Spokane.
What do you need cuts for? You got the shag going.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of that playoff of kind of what my persona was when I was a Gonzaga player, is I had great hair, and now I've got four barbershops. But you go from me to Roni Turioff to Adam Morrison to, you know, Kelly Olynyk and all these guys, there's always at least one Zag on every team every single year that withholds the tradition of having great hair.
So Dan is on the way home from the studio right now driving. So Dan, I don't know if you can see it, but I brought Hayden up on stage, and I know that Hayden is he's a big Gonzaga guy. I recognize the name from like Twitter and everywhere else. So Hayden, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, no. And Corey without the headband tonight was kind of surprising. I think he missed a couple shots because he had his bangs in his eyes. And Dan, shout out to you because when I was a student at Gonzaga, the barber, that's where I went. That was my spot.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, that 28 East Sharp is the location you would have went to, I'm sure, if you were the one right close to Gonzaga. So was that the one you'd go to?
That was the one. And I got a question for you, Dan, because you interacted with me on Twitter recently about a hot mic situation a couple of years ago when you were doing a game. And you were talking about scrimmaging Corey, and you were talking about how he's gotten stronger, and that like in that first, in like his freshman year, you were able to back him all the way down in pickup games. And I'm wondering, like, what does strength for a guy like Corey do as a shooter to allow him to get to a spot more and get to those shots?
Sure. Well, I think there's a couple different parts to the question you answer. And I think strength for a shooter is huge because it gives you the base to not get knocked offline when you're coming off a screen, to be able to, get your shot off. Strength creates shooting range, which obviously Corey's got plenty of range to play at the next level. Mentioning what you were referring to with a hot mic a couple of years ago, if I remember correctly, there was two parts to that story. One would have been when I was playing pickup with those guys, I was guarding Corey up top of the key area, and he had to turn his back to me to be able to see the floor. And I remember talking to him about, hey, you've got to be able to handle the ball with pressure, even if I'm bodying you up, where you got to be able to create space, get away from me, or use your own strength, knock me off balance to create your own space. You got to figure out one of those two ways to be able to see everything going on the floor. And then in regards to me on the offensive end using strength, it wouldn't have been necessarily me backing him down to get somewhere. It would have been me creating contact to get into an entry area for whatever I was trying to do. So, as a point guard who's smaller, a lot of times I would have to, initiate contact, get the defense off balance, and then I get to my entry area into a pick and roll or a post entry or whatever it may be. And so those are probably the two kind of descriptive points in regards to what you were talking about, having heard.
Yeah, man, right on. Like it's been really cool to watch him grow as a player because he was such a pure shooter coming in. I remember, I think it was against Santa Clara his freshman year. He got the ball and he went to a like dunk at the buzzer, and few was chewing him out because he's such a shooter. But now you see him really, like, he's obviously an elite shooter, but he's really working on attacking the rim with a lot more emphasis this year too, which has been really cool to see, and it opens up so much for other people on the team.
Yeah, I think, that's the continued evolution of a lot of Gonzaga players, is the player development. And Coach Few and Tommy and B. Mike and now Roger Powell, they do a great job in evaluating, okay, where is this player now in high school? And how will he fit early in his career to start to help us? But if what could he become? And I think Corey's a great example of maximizing of what he could become.
Yeah. Hayden, you got anything else, man?
No, I got to hop off. But, Dan, we picked your guys' feed up about halfway through. We had, the San Diego feed here, and we picked you guys up. And you got to give a lot of credit to Stephen Carr, who's running production for you guys tonight. You guys had much better audio and obviously much better insights. So thanks as always.
Awesome. Appreciate you.
The audio might have been great. The person creating that audio, I don't know about that.
Right on, guys. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. So if no one else has any questions, then I'm gonna let Dan go here so we can get home without driving into anything. That's the ideal here, right, Dan?
Absolutely. Yep. I got about 2-3 minutes before I get home. So Rob, this was perfect and nice to test this out. I'd love to do it again at some point.
Yeah, definitely, man. Next time, let me know. Anytime you're driving home from the studio, we'll get on this and we'll let people ask you some questions about perfect. Floppy hair, barbershops, and whatever you want.
Awesome.
Take care, man. Thank you.
Yep. You too. Bye. Bye.